Good morning and welcome to another edition of Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. My name is Alex Reamer. Tuesday, for those of you who don't know, live under a rock, is Election Day. We are going to be voting on a slate of candidates here in Massachusetts and also three ballot initiatives that have been receiving lots of coverage, at least two of them. Questions one and three have been receiving lots of coverage, lots of advertising. But what are they all about? To help us with that, we welcome on Gabrielle Emanuel. She works for WGBH and has written a fantastic election guide on WGBHnews.org explaining all of these ballot initiatives, what they mean, the pros, the cons, the yes, the nos. And as you know, very important to be informed when you head up to the ballot box on Tuesday. So Gabrielle Emanuel, again, she put together election guide, WGBHnews.org/election2018. She will join us to talk about all of that. And then to close out the show, we welcome on a returning guest to deal with one of these questions in particular. Mason Dunn is the co-chair of the Yes on Three campaign dealing with transgender protections. That question is about whether or not we repeal the transgender protections that have been on the books in the state for 2 years. So Gabrielle Emanuel first up, and then after that, a conversation with Mason Dunn. It's Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. As always, thanks for listening. And welcome back to Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. In the phone line right now, we have Gabriella Emanuel. She is from WGBH, right across the street from us. Gabriella, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Yes, thank you so much for taking the time and coming on the show this week. So I was doing my own research for these ballot initiatives coming up, a Tuesday election. We know about all the candidates, but these are very, very important because the direct votes that go into law. I noticed you were writing your guide, WGBH.com. I checked it out. I informed myself. What led you guys to do that project this year?
Yeah, so several months ago, WGBH kind of newsroom convened several of us to think about how we could make voters kind of the most knowledgeable as they go into the ballot box and not just voting along party lines right, or because their friend told them to, but how could they really be informed in this part of the democratic process? So we did tons of debates with different candidates, and we're doing radio stories on how each candidate thinks about the environment or school, whatever it is. But then we thought the ballot questions, and as you said, these like become state law if they pass. So we thought we could do a few things. One was create a one-page kind of really plain English one-page statement for each ballot question, arguments pro and against and other things to know. And then we also fact-checked the ads. We answered listener questions. So the goal was to create enough information out there that's really easy to digest such that people can go into the ballot box really informed and also participate in a civic discourse about these issues.
Yeah, it's so important because, of course, especially in today's politics, there's so much focus on the national issues and even the local stuff. If you watch the Warren Deal debates, the majority of topics for them are national issues. But, you know, governor, for example, mm-hmm. Baker and Jay Gonzalez, that's, you know, primarily local. We have all sorts of local races. And, you know, even myself, Gabrielle, I consider myself to be very politically attuned. But even the local stuff, for some reason, kind of goes past me most days when it should be the opposite, because that's really the stuff that affects me most directly, as it affects all people here most directly.
Exactly, yeah. And these ballot questions are just in Massachusetts. And actually, not that many states across the East Coast let their citizens do ballot questions the way we do here in Massachusetts.
Yeah, so let's start with that. So we have every year, every election, we have a number of ballot questions. This year, there are three. First of all, how does the process work? How does an issue get on the ballot as one of these initiatives?
So it's a process of collecting signatures. So it's kind of boots on the ground. Did you get enough unique signatures from Massachusetts voters who say, we want this question on the ballot? And it goes back 100-some years.
Wow.
And this was an effort to kind of create direct democracy, let the citizens have a say about what the laws are in our state. But one of the things that happened a couple decades ago is that there were no limits on the money that can be spent on ballot questions. So this is actually a way that when people aren't having success lobbying their lawmakers, they can kind of go around them and go to the voters and say, if they have enough money to support a big campaign, and say, do you want this? So there's a lot of responsibility here.
Yeah. So how come, though, how come the state legislature doesn't decide these things? We'll get to question one in a moment, but that's a pretty big deal. I mean, if that passes, it will be mandated that hospitals have to hire certain amount of nurses to fit a ratio with patients. That is a major, major piece of legislation that's left in the voters' hands. Why does the state legislature not decide these things?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the state legislature does decide a lot of things.
Right.
And this topic's actually been before them. There's been lobbying on this topic for many, many years, a decade or more. And they've decided not to act on this. So for that particular issue, the union that's pushing for it decided to kind of go around them and go straight to the voters, because this is another option that's available in our state.
Right. And question one has been a very, very expensive campaign. It's an issue that really seems split 50-50. You have a lot of Democrats. Senator Warren, I know, has supported yes on one. Charlie Baker, no on one. But it's, I think, a vote that kind of transcends party lines. So for those who don't know, question one has to do with nursing staff ratios. Tell us more about that, Gabriella.
Yes, you're exactly right. It is split 50-50. It's a really contentious topic. So basically what it does, question one, is about staffing ratios in hospitals, nurse staffing ratios.
Right.
So what it does is it sets a legal limit for the number of patients that can be assigned to each nurse in the hospital. So this number would vary based on the hospital unit and the patient condition, how much care they need. So if you go into the ER and you're really sick, you need one-to-one nurse to patient. If you're less sick, it could be two patients per one nurse. And psych units have more. They have, I think, four or five patients per one nurse. So this would be a legal limit kind of enshrined in law. And it sounds kind of simple up front, but there are a lot of consequences of this that have been debated back and forth. So the people advocating for this, it comes out of the Massachusetts Nurse Association, which is a union that represents about 20% of nurses in the state. And they say we need this for patient safety, that the staffing levels right now are unsafe and they lead to medical errors. Those opposing it, and there are nurses opposing it, as well as kind of lots of hospitals and healthcare organizations, they say these strict ratios override professional judgment and they don't actually lead to better care. And to the contrary, they say we're going to be forced to hire more nurses. It's expensive. We might even need to close units. The financial burden ends up kind of hurting care for people instead of helping care.
So basically what we have is the biggest nursing union in the state is for this initiative because they say, it improves patient safety, but also more nursing jobs, which I'm sure factors into the equation. Explain the yes and no side of these in a little more detail.
Yeah, sure. So the yes side, vote yes to enact nurse-patient ratios. And their arguments are basically the biggest thing they're trumpeting is that this is important for patient safety. They say right now nurses are overburdened, and that leads to medical errors, hospital-acquired infections, and nurse burnout. Nurses are leaving the profession, they say, because they're so burdened. And as you pointed out, this isn't really part of their campaign, but it would lead to hiring many more nurses. The estimate by experts is that it would increase nurse salaries, something like 4-6% across the board, and the demand for nurses would just be much higher. So that's another factor. And they say hospitals can afford it. They say, look at kind of how much CEOs are paid in the healthcare industry, and there's plenty of money is kind of the yes argument, vote yes for these ratios. The no argument on the other side says the current system lets hospitals determine nurse assignments, and that there is no evidence, and they're correct on this, that ratios lead to better care. And they're saying that the consequences, the unintended consequences of this law is that you'll be hiring more nurses. Everyone agrees on that. But they say they're going to be less qualified nurses. They're going to be forced to recruit these nurses away from places like nursing homes. And then what are nursing homes going to do?
Right.
And they say in the end, it will actually hurt the patient care. And one thing we can do is we can look to California, which is the only state that actually has nurse-patient ratios in place. And there, there was lower burnout, lower injury rates. So things got better for nurses. But in terms of quality of care for the patients, things did not really improve. Some things got better, some things got worse, but experts say it really was a wash all taken together.
And I was reading that the no side, some of their main arguments are the cost. They said, I was reading the Globe, they said it would be about $1 billion extra, mm-hmm. something like that. And the other argument is community hospitals. They say that this will adversely affect community hospitals that depend on Medicaid, Medicare payments. What's the truth in that? Is that factual, or is that ginned up to get people riled up? What's the truth and what's the lies there?
Yeah, so when I was researching this, I reached out to the Health Policy Commission. This is an independent state agency, and they're actually tasked with implementing this if it does pass. Mm-hmm. And they came up with their own cost estimate, which was between $676 million and $949 million a year. So that $1 billion isn't actually that far out of the ballpark. And the Health Policy Commission said their numbers may be an underestimate. So it may be costing that per year, which would, of course, lead to hospitals having to figure out their budgets, and maybe it might lead to higher premiums.
Right, and they said we would potentially lose psychiatric beds as well in some of these hospitals. How would that happen?
Yeah, so the community hospitals, psychiatric beds, these are places that hospitals are already struggling to make ends meet. They aren't necessarily kind of bringing in the money, and hospitals are saying those are the most vulnerable when they look at their budget and they say, we have to come up with $1 billion a year to fund this this proposal. And the thing about community hospitals is when you look at the ratios in this proposal and what nurse staffing is at right now, it varies a lot across the state. So the big research institutions, think Mass General, Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, they're already pretty close to meeting these ratios. So they wouldn't have to staff up and hire more nurses, But it's the community hospitals that really would have to scale up their number of nurses, and that could be a real burden for them.
Gabrielle, question two. So we hear a lot about question one, which we just covered. Question three we'll get to is obviously a very contentious issue. Question two, though, I've seen virtually no ads or anything about this. It is a commission on limiting election spending and corporate rights. They say it'll create a citizen commission to push for a constitution amendment to overturn Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision, of course. I know a few other states have something like this as well in the book. So what is question two? Commission, not law? This seems very, very confusing.
It is, actually. And as you're totally right, people have not been talking about this quite as much. And partly that's because there's no formal opposition. So they're kind of spinning it as we will overturn Citizens United, which is not what is happening here. It's a small step on what they hope is a path towards overturning Citizens United. So as you said, it creates a commission. 15 unpaid citizens who apply and are then selected by politicians to serve on this committee that basically kind of will write a report on money in politics and talk about this new amendment that to the U.S. Constitution that would regulate campaign finance. And it all goes back to this big Supreme Court decision in 2010 that Citizens United, that kind of it's become a symbol of money in politics, where corporations, unions, individuals all kind of could put unlimited amounts of money into outside political contributions.
Right, and that's how we got the creation of super PACs.
Yes, exactly. But I should say that a new amendment to the U.S. Constitution would take a very long time and a lot of work. We're pretty far from that right now. And you need two-thirds of the U.S. House and Senate and three-quarters of all the states to kind of ratify an amendment, and that would take a ton of work.
She said there's no official opposition. Will this pass in a landslide, and we'll have this commission get formed? And then where does it – so great, the commission gets formed. Then what?
That's a very good question. when I spoke to the folks promoting this, the American Promise is the group, and they're working nationally on this, and they really push this as kind of Massachusetts taking a stand, going on record saying, we oppose Citizens United, we oppose unlimited outside spending. But it's more about taking a stand than it is about kind of what is in that report that these citizens might write.
And this report would go to Congress, correct? And I was reading the deadline is, what, December 2019? Is that correct?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so they would send their findings to Congress, and what would this commission be doing? What findings would they try to
generate? Yeah, they're tasked with a couple different things. Partially, they are looking up kind of in Massachusetts, what are the regulations around corporate spending? Could Massachusetts, as a state, limit campaign contributions by corporations? So there's part of it's just looking locally at our state, what we can do around money and politics. And then they're also tasked with coming up with language for this proposed amendment to the U.S. Constitution. What should, I mean, amendments are often very short, packed with meaning. What should those words be? In order to give lawmakers the right to regulate campaign finance, and also the goal of this commission is to get corporations and unions outside, out of politics, outside of funding politicians and campaigns.
Got it. And of course, we know campaign finance is a hugely, hugely important issue. Then Citizens United, you could say that no Supreme Court decision has shaped our modern politics quite like that. So question three, Gabriella, is the Transgender Anti-Discrimination Initiative. This is proposing to repeal the 2016 state law that banned discrimination against transgender people in public places, bathrooms, malls, restaurants, etc. So the first question is, so this, again, came into law in 2016. It was signed by our governor, Charlie Baker. How did this get back on the ballot then, if it's already law?
Yeah, exactly. So it's the first time in a long time that we've had a repeal effort on the ballot. And basically, as soon as it was signed into law, folks who wanted to repeal it got to work collecting those signatures they needed to get it on the ballot. My understanding is it was a very grassroots effort, kind of going to churches and things like that to gather the signatures. So it started years ago, and I think the folks who pushed to get that 2016 law on the books knew this was a potential from the very beginning. It's a repeal effort, which is different, and it's confusing because yes means keep the law and no means repeal the protections for transgender people. So the no side brought this ballot question, which usually it's the yes side that brings it.
Yes, the wording for these things I feel like is confusing, and I feel like almost purposefully so. in some cases.
So the
argument in favor of this is pretty straightforward. You want to keep these protections in place. You believe that transgender folks should be able to use the restroom of their choice. That transgender folks should not be discriminated against in restaurants or businesses, etc. What exactly is the repeal argument? Because if you watch the Deal Warren debates where this has come up numerous times, Jeff Deal says, there are loopholes here, but the Massachusetts law in the books already says that criminal acts are still prosecuted. So what exactly is the no argument in terms of this this question?
Yeah, so I guess there are two things. The first is an argument that opportunistic men, or they say convicted sex offenders, could exploit this law, and they would pretend to be transgender so that they could access women's spaces, such as locker rooms and restrooms, and then go prey on people. I have to say, I spoke to some folks who've been studying this at UCLA Law School, and they looked at crime reports across Massachusetts before this exact law took place, but with a similar law that was passed at the city and town level, and there was no evidence that this is the case. So that's the fear, but there's nothing to suggest that's been happening. Their other argument is that the law, as it's currently written in the 2016 version, defines transgender too broadly. They say you don't need to kind of be on hormone therapy or have gender reassignment surgery. So how do you prove if someone's transgender or not? And it is defined broadly. It says it needs to be a core part of your identity. So that's their other argument, that it's too broad.
And I know we were not in the prediction business, but forecasting, how does it look for this question three? You mentioned there's a strong grassroots effort to get this on the ballot. Is this in legitimate danger of being repealed?
Yeah, so the latest polls I've seen actually suggest that a while ago it was kind of closer to being a bit of a toss-up. Now it looks like the yes side, the keep this 2016 law that protects transgender people on the books, is getting more traction. There were 70-some, I think 74% in the recent UMass Lowell Boston Globe survey. And that is suggests that these protections will stay on the books for transgender people. That said, when I talked to the campaign, the Yes campaign, they were concerned that the folks fighting for repeal would kind of send out tons of ads at the last second that are fear-mongering, and that could sway it at the last second. So they weren't kind of ready to relax quite yet, despite having polling that suggested that these protections will stay. And one other interesting thing that came out of that poll is actually that voters seemed a bit confused about what the law actually did.
Yes, please explain that.
Yeah, so when you ask them, do you want to keep this 2016 law that protects transgender people on the books, they'd say, yeah, I do. But when you said, are you okay with transgender people using the restroom that matches their gender identity, people were a lot less likely, 20% almost less likely to say they were okay with that. So that suggests that people didn't really know what the law did, or something was kind of amiss. So there's confusion on this question, both in what yes and no mean, and also maybe in what the law itself means.
Well, because when you say, Gabrielle, transgender protections, it protects them from discrimination in public places. So the way that I envision that, for example, is that let's say this law gets repealed. If you're a transgender person, you could go into a restaurant and the owner could refuse to serve you because you're transgender. Is that accurate? If this law gets repealed, could that happen, or is that taking it too far?
Whether or not that will happen, I don't know, but
right.
that is the concern that restaurants and, more importantly, hospitals, health clinics won't be required to serve people who are transgender. They're just not protected to go out into anywhere that's open to the public. Think taxis, Lyfts, Ubers, as you said, restaurants, hotels, gyms, and they could be discriminated against, and they don't have the protection of the law behind them saying you can't do that. It is worth noting that Massachusetts has other protections in terms of for transgender people. They have protection in housing, employment, credit, public education. So there are other laws that are not being challenged this election that protect transgender people. But this is about going to all sorts of public places. So it's not a small protection.
Yeah, so it really is much. So the bathroom issue gets the most play, but it really is much broader than that.
Exactly. Much, much broader. I mean, it's anywhere that's open to the public. As you said, hospitals, restaurants, sports stadiums, you name it. Can you be discriminated against in those spaces?
And as we're looking at it, which question looks like it's going to be the most contentious? Question three obviously is very, very strong feelings, but you mentioned the latest poll shows a pretty strong chance that this law stays. So which you mentioned question two is no opposition even. So is question one, is that the one that's going to probably be the closest on Tuesday?
Yeah, it's between question
if you're to
one and
forecast,
three, for sure.
Right.
I don't know. I think question one has been kind of blanketing the airwaves. So I think that a lot of people are thinking about that one, partially because it's very confusing. I think ballot question three is kind of clear. The wording is confusing, but do you want to protect transgender people or remove those protections? So that's kind of a bit of a clear question, although we said there is some confusion. But the nurse-patient ratios, that one has so many different facets. I think that will be one to watch.
All right, Gabrielle Emanuel, she works for WGBH, and please read her handy election guides for these issues, candidate issues, if you want to be informed going to the polls, which I know all of you out there do. So, Gabrielle, thanks so much for joining us. Much appreciated, and I'm sure we'll talk down the line.
Thank you very much.
And welcome back to Boston Community Affairs on WEEI. On the phone lines right now, we have Mason Dunn. He is the co-chair of the Massachusetts Yes on Three campaign. Mason, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Yes, thanks again for coming back on the show. So this Tuesday, of course, is Election Day across the country and here in Massachusetts. We have three ballot initiatives. Earlier in the show, listeners heard an overview of each question, but I want to focus in on question three. This is probably the most divisive of the three ballot initiatives. I think a lot of people, Mason, have a broad idea about what question three is about. They most notably, of course, believe it's transgender bathroom usage, but it's much more than that. So tell the people, what are they exactly voting on when they go to the polls and decide on question three in a few days?
Sure. So question three is about upholding protections that we have had for now over 2 years in the state of Massachusetts. And these protections ensure that transgender people can access public spaces free from discrimination or harassment. Now, those public spaces, you are correct that a lot of people assume or just think about bathrooms and locker rooms, but actually what we're talking about are any public spaces. And the ability is, for me as a transgender person and all transgender people across the state of Massachusetts, to be able to utilize public transportation free from discrimination, go to the park or the library or the hospital or restaurant, any place that's open to the public is a public accommodation, and that's what's at stake here with question three.
Okay, yes, and you mentioned that transgender people have had these protections in Massachusetts for 2 years because the legislature passed a bill, correct? 2 years ago?
Correct.
Which the governor signed.
Yeah, and so we actually passed with a super majority here in Massachusetts and was signed into law by a Republican governor.
Right.
And we've had these protections in place for now over 2 years, and they have been so important for transgender people so that we know we can access these spaces free from discrimination and with the basic rights and dignity that we deserve. And I think that one of the misconceptions is around a yes or no vote on question three. And so we ask people vote yes to uphold these protections that we have had in place under law for now 2 years, rather than a no vote, which would remove these very basic rights and dignities.
When you say protections, what do you mean by that?
Well, the protections ensure that if I were to experience discrimination in a public space, I have the ability to hold that business accountable for that discrimination. So I would be protected from discrimination, knowing that I have the ability to file a complaint, and businesses are on notice that they should not be discriminating against people on the basis of gender identity or gender expression.
Now, the argument against question three, or one of the ones that you hear surfaced, is we're all for equal protections, but this law would create potential loopholes. What is your response to that?
Well, that is, quite frankly, a lie and something that is not true. Our law, the law that we passed in 2016, explicitly states that it cannot be used to defend criminal acts or any improper purpose.
Okay.
So if somebody goes into a restroom or locker room or any space intending to commit a crime, that crime is still a crime regardless of non-discrimination protection.
And you mentioned, Mason, that this was passed into law 2 years ago. Why is it up for a ballot initiative on Tuesday?
Unfortunately, what happened is that opponents to LGBTQ equality, the same opponents that fought against marriage equality many years ago, they were successful in gathering the very low number of signatures needed to put this law up for a referendum vote. And so that is how it ended up on the ballot. It's not something that we as transgender people or the LGBTQ community asked for, but it was put up for referendum vote by anti-transgender activists.
Okay. And last week, Mason, we talked about the Trump administration's reported efforts to change the definition of gender under Title IX and make it biological and unchangeable. What are your thoughts? Well, I'm sure I know where you stand on that, but what kind of effect would that have on the transgender community, and how does that tie into the importance of question three and initiatives like that?
Well, you know, I can say I've talked to so many transgender people since that memo was leaked a few weeks ago from
right.
the White House administration, and people are truly scared, scared about the fact that their federal government doesn't want to see them, doesn't believe that they exist. And that is so so troubling as a transgender person myself. But it does, as you accurately point out here, it does emphasize the importance of question three here in Massachusetts, because it will be a clear message to the transgender community here in Massachusetts that we see you, we support you, and we value your basic rights and dignity. and a clear message to the rest of the country that transgender rights are human rights and that it should not be put up for a popular vote. They should not be removed or rolled back because we support them as an entire commonwealth.
All right, Mason Dunn. He is the co-chair of the Yes on Three campaign here in Massachusetts. Mason, thanks for taking the time. As always, it is appreciated.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. This is great.
So thank you to our guests today, Gabriella Emanuel and Mason Dunn, for coming on the show. As always, if you have not voted yet, vote, vote, vote on Tuesday. It's your civic duty. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.